Viewers, listeners, welcome to another episode of Blighty Talks Bricks. My guest today is a comedian, a writer, a presenter, a broadcaster, an actor. I don't actually know him personally. He's very kindly come on the show due to a mutual friend that we have. I've actually seen him on stage. He's a super funny guy. I love the way that he goes around his business. So I'm really genuinely excited about today's episode. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Ian Stone. Ian, welcome to Blighty Talks Bricks.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me. I'm all right. It's so weird for me walking down here because we're recording Old Street, right? Or Shoreditch, I suppose. And I walked past the Comedy Cafe, what used to be the Comedy Cafe, which is where I did my first ever gig.
Was it really?
August the 14th, 1848 it was. Yeah. Everyone was wearing
seven.
Top hats.
I was seven.
Yeah. I was a bit older, smoking big pipes. Everyone arrived on penny farthings. Yeah, 1991 and my first ever gig. And very much looking forward to my second.
Stop making me laugh because I'm trying to do a show here and you're making me laugh.
I do apologise. We'll be serious from now on.
33 years.
Yeah.
My maths is reasonable. First question, how do you become a comedian? My process, I've never thought about it, is was you one of the kids at the back of the class that was trying to be funny, maybe to cover up for, in my case, if I were trying to do it, my other weaknesses, but you were just funny and you looked around and thought, actually, fuck me, they're all laughing. And
No. I mean, look, it's faith. I've grown into it, all right? This is the best it's ever been for me, really. This didn't really work when I was a kid. And I got some abuse, obviously. I got called Concord every day at school for 5 days, 5 years. And this was a Jewish school, by the way. I mean, it was a nasal extravaganza. But I got a lot of stick. And then, but I still didn't think I'm going to be a comedian. I thought I'd just be a good Jewish boy. I became an engineer, is what I was doing, right? Heating, ventilation.
So you was intelligent.
Well, I'm good at maths and I'm good at English. So those are the subjects that I liked. And then I met my missus, Rosie, when I was 21, right? I'm still with her now. Yep. And 2 weeks after we met, she said to me, you should be a comedian. And I didn't think I must be a comedian, but I did think, who the hell is this woman and what has she seen?
But did your mates tell you you were funny?
No, but I knew I could make people laugh. I always enjoyed it. I had the desire, the affliction, I think one would say.
Okay.
I like making people laugh. But I never thought I could do it for a living. And then my missus, Rosie, said to me I should be a comedian. And 7 years later, I was walking down the road towards the Comedy Cafe in Old Street, trying to be a comedian.
And, you know, I read out some of the things you do. Is that your favourite, being a comedian, or do you like the other, or do you like that balance of being a broadcaster and a bit of acting?
I like all of it. I haven't done a lot of acting, to be honest. I did do the Katie Brand sketch show, and I played a blind man on the road to Nazarene, healed by Jesus. And one of the extras said to me, you play a blind man very well. Did you like practice it and look into it? I said, I just shut my eyes, mate. It's one of my favourite ever moments. But I like anything where I don't have to get a proper job. That is the truth of it. I like talking shit about football. I like writing. Obviously, I love stand-up. I mean, I do love. I mean, actually, if you're asking me, and I had to choose one, I'd choose stand-up.
Would
because
you?
Yeah, because standing on stage in front of people, talking shit and making people laugh, if you can do it, there's nothing
better. Well, I was just going to say, yeah, I like the idea of it, but I'd have no chance of doing it.
Yeah. You know, you got to know what you're doing. But honestly, when I first started, I mean, that gig I was talking about in Old Street, I don't think I got one laugh. To be honest, I mean, it was a very strange experience. But I remember the fifth gig I ever did was downstairs at the King's Head in Crouch End, famous old comedy club, and I got some big laughs. And I was so excited by the gig, I ran back home to Finchley, which
did
is
you?
About 3 miles. There's nothing like standing on stage and making people
I don't know what the terminology is, but you go to your first show, probably a bit unfair, it's your first show. But when you didn't get a laugh, do you not sit there and think, fuck, I'm no good at this?
No, well, I never thought I was any good at it to begin with anyway. So when I'm standing on stage, it was a very weird thing. All my mouth went dry. I had all that.
Yeah.
And the right side of my body started shaking, right? My leg and my arm. So I put my hand in my pocket. So it's all shaking. And there was a moment when I'm looking around thinking, everyone is looking at me. Because it was so alien to me to be on stage. In fact, what happened was, my missus was in the audience watching. There were two blokes.
Maybe she didn't laugh on the first one.
No, of course not. She'd heard it all a million times. We've been through it. She doesn't laugh that much even now, to be honest with you. But no, she was sitting behind these two guys who were talking about me and said, yeah, the material's good, but he's a terrible performer. And I thought, I can live with that, because that's the first time I'd ever stepped on stage in front of people. Yep. But at least I know I can write jokes. So, and then you do it the second time, you get a few laughs, and those laughs sustain you, and then you get good at it. They keep you going, yeah.
So what do you, when you, if you've had one or two occasions maybe where it's not gone well, how do you deal with it? You just think, right, I'm started, I've got to get to the middle and then get to the end.
Do your time, get off.
Simple as
that.
Do
your time, get off. Although, obviously, there have been occasions when I've left early. If it's a corporate, do your time and then get off. Right? 20 minutes, that is a tight 17, and then you're off. Listen, it happens sometimes. That's why comics get on pretty well,
yeah.
Because we all know
you that help each other awful out
pain. We can't help each other out, but we all understand the pain of dying on your ass in front of a load of people. And it happens from time to time. Not so much lately, because you get better at it.
Yeah, well, you're very good at it.
You get better at you. And essentially what happens is you're more heavily armed with stuff that you can do. So you think, I'll do this. And they look at you and you go, oh, you don't like that? How about this then?
And you move
and
it
you
around.
Take them somewhere else. And so once you've been doing it a while, you've got a bit more of that stuff. You've got a lot of back catalogue.
Hecklers, easy to cope with, tough to cope with?
You know what? Hecklers was always the thing that people said to you, oh, how do you cope with it? Heckling, how can you possibly? To be honest, I'm not saying this to encourage people. If you're watching this, don't come and heckle, all right? But the truth is, I don't care. I mean, because what they're going to say to me, I haven't heard before.
And
to be honest, my favourite moments are when the audience are funny as well.
Well, I've seen some of your stuff. And I've seen you put people down, and I can just feel the ground opening up for them.
Well, I don't want to be mean to people, unless they're mean to me, right? Yeah. At that point, all bets are off. That's the truth of it. I mean, my favourite ever moment, and this, I don't want to big myself up, right? But honestly, I was so proud of myself. This guy, I said to this guy, what do you do for a living? And he said, I'm an engineer. And I went, all right, what sort of engineer? He says, you wouldn't understand. I went, well, try me. And he said, supersonic gas solutions. And I went, expialidocious, right? I mean, instantly. And what was interesting about it was I also was like, wow, where the hell did that come from? I mean, it was, and the room went, whoa. And it was a beautiful, magical moment, right? But the thing is, comedy for me is music. I hear it like music. So it's a rhythmical thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the way my brain is wired. I think it was probably always wired that way. But I've tweaked those connections. So now that's what works for me. So no, heckling doesn't bother me. I find it quite amusing that people would think.
Oh,
they would,
I mean,
shout
listen,
out.
I would never do it. I mean, I do get picked on. It's probably because I'm ugly, but I do get picked on by comedians generally, especially at auctions and stuff like that. I mean,
really,
even if I'm hiding in the back, they find me. But
the red glasses. I mean, it's what I'm saying. It's a bit of a statement, right? I mean, it's not that I would look for you, but I would see you and think, "Hello."
Yeah. Got a right tosser here. Let's get into him.
No, I wouldn't say that. But he fancies himself a bit. I might have a bit of fun here. Do you know what I mean? But the thing is, you also look like you're personable and you'd be up for it, and you wouldn't get hurt by it because you're a grown up. No. You don't want people who would get upset by it, really. And I'm not trying to upset anyone.
No.
I'm genuinely just having a little play, because the beauty of it, I did some gigs in Canada years ago in this club, Yuck Yucks, and there's all these signs on the wall, no heckling, right? No heckling, no, the comedy, it's all sacrosanct. You know, they're doing their bit. And the promoter said to me, so you have heckling in England? I went, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He said, doesn't it spoil the show? I said, yeah, sometimes it does. I said, sometimes, though, something magical and beautiful happens in the room, and people know that they're watching something that's only happening this one time.
Yeah.
And that is something you don't really get in any other art form.
Very true, actually.
So and he looked at me and went, I never saw it that way. And I thought, no. It's not that I particularly encourage heckling. I really don't. But if people want to have a chat, I'm more than happy to.
Well, trust me, I'm definitely going to get under the table next time, just in case. You're on your national tour.
Yes.
Keeping it together.
Yes.
How's it going?
Oh, well, it's been great. I was in Leeds this week. Where was I? Southampton, Brighton, Leeds. I need to speak to the booker about the arrangements for gigs in that, you know.
You're keeping your carbon footprint down.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? We needed a map. A map would have been really good. And they've been great. People are turning up and they're laughing, and I'm doing the whole show. So I do about 45, 50 minutes in the first section, have a little break, come back on, do another 40 minutes. And honestly, it's a joy. I mean, it's just great.
I suppose it's the same in any country. Geography in the UK, different kind of sense of humour? Do they take to different accents?
I mean, it's always... Each town is different, right? Of course it's different. I mean, they used to say... I've heard it said about... I always loved Birmingham, right? Birmingham was one of my favourite towns. The reason being that if you go to most places in the UK and slag it off, say it's a bit shit here, right? People get a bit funny about it. But in Birmingham, they go... It is, isn't it? It is a bit shittier. And I love that about them, right? They're something very down to earth. But honestly, I mean, I've done what I've done, six or seven so far. Liverpool was absolutely fantastic.
Was it? Because some people say, oh, I struggle in Liverpool. They because supposedly they think their sense of humour is better than people in the UK.
Listen, they do think they're funny, and that's fine, right? That's fine. Because... it's my belief that I'm funnier, and they soon realise that. And the truth is, we're just chatting away. It doesn't really matter. If they come up with funny stuff, what does it matter? What does it matter? I mean, you know what? I remember this one time where there was this couple in the audience at a comedy store in London, fat couple, right? There's no getting away from it, both overweight, and they sat there, and they used to come regularly, and we used to get to know them, and I waved when I went in, and we chat, and I'm on stage... chatting to him about something or other, and I think there was they got me with a really funny heckle, right? I said yeah, he had a go at me about something, and then about a bit later on, I had this routine about how, well, if somebody said to you, don't come round for food, you wouldn't come round for food. And I looked at him, I said, you would, obviously, right? And everyone laughed, and I said, all right, that's 1-1. I said, let's do penalties, right? We'll do penalties, see who's going to win. And he went, no, let's do a race, right? Let's do a race. Everyone laughed, and his missus said, well, you'd win by a nose, right? And the place erupted. And then she looked at me, and she went, please don't hurt me. And I'm like, no. No, in that particular case, sometimes you have to acknowledge you've got to take it on the chin, right? And in my head, I went, or in your case, chins. But I didn't do it, because you don't have to win all the time. So I'm happy. If we're getting laughs and we're having a good time, doesn't really matter. Really doesn't matter, you know?
So talking about good times, I personally think we're in a shit world. That might be because I'm getting old. I know you and I are of a similar age.
Yeah.
I think we've lost a little bit of humour. How do you, not just you, but how do you think comedians cope? Because there seems to be so many filters, because everything you say upsets someone.
Yeah. Do I think it's a shit world? I mean, I'm optimistic, right? I've always been an optimistic soul. I meet a lot of lovely people. I have a lot of nice reactions. There's obviously wankers out there, right? We know there are. But I tend to think there's more good people. You know, when we had the riots a couple of months ago in Southport, and then all those people came together to rebuild the wall of the mosque, right? And the amount of people that came together to rebuild that town and tidy up, that's what I believe in. I agree. There's a lot of horrible stuff happening out there. But I don't know, on balance, you know, I think we're winning. I genuinely do.
I need to drink some of your water then, because I'm probably a bit more pessimistic than that.
Yeah, but people, I understand people being pessimistic, and I get that, right? But I've always been an optimistic soul, and I'm like that with my football team. I'm like that with the world generally. I mean, obviously, if Donald Trump, this might go out after Donald Trump goes back in the White House, right? For example, and obviously that might be a bit of a disaster. But assuming he's only there for 4 years, things change, you know, and you know what? I mean, in this show I'm doing, I talk about people saying how it was better in the old days, and how I think it's nonsense. I don't believe it was better in the old days. You know, everyone goes on about the 60s being great. And I understand we all had hope and all the rest of it, but America was in Vietnam, India and Pakistan were having major wars. Egypt and Israel, I mean, luckily that's all sorted now. But you know what I mean? It's there's always horrible stuff going on. You know, prior to the 1940s, there was no NHS. There was no social security. There was no safety net. Any one of us, right, and you are
you're as
peasant as I am, right, we're fucked, right? So it's better than then. Definitely. I don't know when you're necessarily saying things were better. When were they better? 80s, Margaret Thatcher, mass unemployment, Kajagoogoo. Are you seriously saying it was better in the 80s?
Too shy.
No. But I genuinely, I don't see a time when it was better. I mean, I talk about, in the show, I talk about the 70s and all the violence and all the racism.
Oh, yeah.
It was horrible. So... yeah, there are things that could be better, of course. And we've got 24-hour news and it makes things feel worse. And we catastrophize.
You the crap and just ignore the good.
Yeah, but there's a lot of good stuff out there. You know, I mean, I spent half an hour this morning watching people stopping babies crying by chucking cheese slices on their heads. I mean, how can you not say it's not a better world when you can see that?
And I need to get that. I've not had that one.
Have you not seen that one?
No.
Or the other one, which is brilliant, is the Irish fella that is, I think it's his two kids. They get him into some sort of balloon and he bounces around to jump around. Honestly, it's great. It is, they pump him. They get like a leaf blower. They go, get the leaf blower. And they're blowing this thing up. And then this bloke jumps. It's fantastic.
Okay.
There's a lot of good stuff out there.
So... going back to the comedian bit, going back to the filter bit where we get, oh, well, you know, can't say this, can't say that. How do you have in your mind there is a line, there is a filter, or is it actually it is fun? It's meant to actually be lighthearted and I'm just going to deliver it the way I want to deliver it.
In a live venue, in a live setting, I will say whatever I want to say, right? Because I trust myself. I've been doing it long enough and I also think... I'm a decent person and I won't say anything. I mean, sure, people might get offended, but what can I do about? I can't do anything about that. It's different when you're posting stuff online. You have to be a bit more, because context is everything.
Yeah.
And out of context, you take it out of a comedy club, out of a room where people know you and like you, and put it online where people are scrolling through all sorts of horrible stuff, and then they come upon this thing out of context, they might take it the wrong way. So... for broadcast, and I include social media in that, it's different. But in a live setting, I will say whatever I want to say and trust myself and trust them as well.
Give them the respect.
To understand that we're having fun in this, and it's okay to have fun. And I think there should be room for the transgressive anyway. I genuinely do. I think it's more difficult with broadcasting now.
Yep.
When you look at the stuff... that used to be broadcast and the stuff that they can put out now, it's more of a tightrope walk. But I don't get on the telly anyway, so I don't give a shit about that.
Well, you might be getting on the TV the way you're going. You're doing really well. On your show, your tour.
Yeah.
Love it, enjoy it. Hard graft, up and down, staying in hotels.
Traveling's a bit difficult. I was in Leeds the other day. It's 3 hours there and 3 hours back. It's a bit much.
Do you stay overnight generally?
Sometimes. Depends. Like Brighton, I came home. Southampton, I came home. Leeds, I stayed. The travel can be a bit tiresome. But I like being in different towns. You know, I mean, I've been to all these towns before. So if I'm in Brighton, I'll go and see some pals. In Leeds, I know there's good places to eat. I mean, I just try and make the most of it, really. And you've got to understand also that I do feel privileged to do it. You know, I mean, I turn up in a town, I talk shit. People give me money. They come along, they buy the book that I've written. I mean, it's and they send nice messages on social media. And I mean, it's a privilege. And so I'm not going to sit here and moan about it. I mean, obviously there are times when I'm in a hotel room for the fourth night in a row and I'm thinking I'd like to be at home.
Yeah.
But you know what? I love doing this job. So.
Family supportive, obviously, with the same lady you mentioned to me.
It was her idea, wasn't it? So she can hardly moan at me now, can she? So no, yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, my kids are 26 and 22. they're not at home anyway. Yeah. Or one's at home once in a while, but they're not at home, so they don't give a shit where dad is, right? I'll speak to them and everything. And my missus, no, she is absolutely fine with it because she knows how much I love it. And you know what? She spent time with me during the pandemic when I was stuck at home for 3 months. Let me tell you, she is happy for me to be out of the house.
Yeah, honestly. I get that one, yeah.
Well, no, because I'm walking around every night about 8 o'clock going, what's your name, where you're from? And my kids are going, you're our dad. Leave us alone. So, yeah, it works for everyone that I'm on the road doing my thing.
Writing your own stuff? How does that work in the comedy? I mean, growing up, I was always told that the best writer of comedy jokes was Bob Monkhouse.
Yeah, Monkhouse was brilliant. Yeah.
And that he would send stuff to people that he felt could deliver that. Is there an element that you all stick together in that way, or you've got certain people you go to, or you just...
Well, I write for a few people, but for myself, I write my stuff. And really, when I say write, I mean, what happens is I look at the world, I get pissed off, and I say it, and it comes out funny, really. I mean, in the end, it's sort of funny moaning, really, and Jews are good at that.
Well, you mentioned, I've seen a few of your bits and pieces online and stuff like, you mentioned being Jewish, you're, rightly so, I get the impression you're a proud Jew. Is it a good day now? I mean, Jews at the moment, I've got Jewish friends who are getting a shit time.
Oh, yeah, this is not, it's been better. It's a weird time to be a Jew at the moment. I mean, yeah, we're getting some stick. But again, going back to what I was saying, I travel quite hopefully, and I don't get a lot of abuse. I do get some. I get some online. I got some bloke on the bottom of one of my clips going, the Austrian painter was right. And you go, hell. Right. Yeah. Hitler. I'm assuming it was Hitler. I mean, if he was talking about Gustav Klimt, I feel terrible for reporting him, right? But, yeah, there's some shit that goes on out there. And I've had abuse at gigs as well. But most of the time, people are nice. And especially when I'm talking about it, I'm not a massive pro-Israel, right? I mean, I do... I sort of sit somewhere in the middle of the whole thing.
I think it's probably a good call.
Yeah. And so when I talk about it, I try and be fair to everyone.
But it's just association you get abused sometimes, isn't it? Yeah, it isn't, this man's a human being. He's got his own brain. It's just numpties with an association.
Yeah, but that happens to black people. That happens to Asian people. That happens to ginger people. It happens to people. And you're going to, that's what I say, you're going to meet wankers from time to time. But most of the people I meet are not like that.
So going forward, you're, I think it's fair to say, on the up. You're doing well. What's the ambition for you now? Or is it to... Oh, well, I've got next week sorted and I'll go from there.
I mean, it's sort of weird for me to think about it, right? I mean, I've been doing it 33 years. I just want to keep doing it. I want to keep doing the podcast. We do this Handbrake Off podcast,
yep,
right?
Yeah, that's one of the things I've been to see.
And you know, we did Leicester Square Theatre the other week. 400 people turned up to listen to me and my mates talk shit about football. I used to do the Tuesday Club with Alan Davis and Keith Dover and the rest of them. And the number of people who still talk to me about that podcast... you know, I did a radio show with Ian Wright for 5 years. I sat
was
with
that
Wright.
On Absolute?
Yeah, on Absolute Radio. I sat with Wright every Saturday afternoon. I mean, an absolute hero of mine. And we're sitting there talking shit, and he's all right, Stoney. And I'm like, hey, Wright, Ian. And it, you know, I wrote a book about growing up in the 70s about the Jam and about how much I love the Jam. And Paul Weller phoned me up. Matt Lucas is a mutual.
It would have been fair for me to say Keith Weller when you said growing up with someone in the 70s.
Paul. But it was Matt Lucas is a mutual friend. And I said to Matt, can you get the book to Paul Weller? Because I know he knows him. And he went, sure. And he gets the book to Weller. And then Matt is sending me screenshots of texts he's getting from Paul Weller saying, I love your mates, but I'm going to phone him. And then he phoned me up, Weller, one morning, about 10 o'clock. He went, hello, Ian, it's Paul Weller, right? And I wanted to go, I know. Right? But I went, oh, hey, Paul, like he phones me every week. And then he went, I really like your book. I've forgotten how shit it was in the 70s. And I went, can I use that as a quote on the front cover? And it's on the front cover.
Is it really?
And then we ended up having a bite to eat. I mean, these things, this is what I'm talking about, the privilege.
It's bizarre, isn't it?
Well, it is bizarre. And if you said to 14-year-old me or 16-year-old me or whatever that I'd do a radio show with Ian Wright, right, Arsenal's second highest goal scorer, or I'd have an hour-long conversation with Thierry Henry about the Leeds goal when he scored and he was, you know, or game. I'd have a bite to eat with Paul Weller. I'd have thought, what? So this is what I'm talking about. And I really, if you're asking me what I want more of that. I want more of that sort of stuff, that fun. I want to go and do gigs around the world. I want to...
So it's you want to go, because like you mentioned Canada, you want to travel the world a bit with
the
show?
I'm going to Australia. I'm going to Australia in March to do it. Then I'll go back to Edinburgh. Well, I'll go to Glastonbury first. Obviously, yeah. I absolutely love going there.
My first time was this year.
Really? Mm. Did you have a good time?
I had a great time.
Have I said something? Oh, okay, good.
We're not supposed to have an audience, but we've got an audience. Yeah, they're taking a piss. Because
were you camping?
Well, we sort of. I did it nicely.
Well, exactly. See, now you're a grown-up, right? Do you have a camper van?
No, but I did.
You did glamping. Yeah. You did glamping. Yeah. And fair enough. If you can, listen, we get a camper van. We drive down there. I hire an RV and we drive down and I park behind the cabaret tent where I'm performing, plug in, which let me tell you is a joy. I've got a fridge, I've got a shower, I've got a toilet, and I take one of the kids, whichever one has pleased me the most. And it's really my happy place. I go down there on a Wednesday afternoon. I'm there till the Monday and I couldn't be happier. I've been about 10 or 12 times. I absolutely love it. But the point is, I want to have more of those experiences, you know, that joy that you get. You know, I keep going back to it. I can't believe how lucky I am. Obviously, I've got a talent for stand-up, right?
Well, you make your own luck.
Well, I think that's true. And obviously, I've been brave enough, you know. I mean, I was an engineer, right? And then I said, I'm going to India to find myself, right? Which is what you do. Basically, that's what everyone...
I went to India. The moment I got there, I wanted to come back.
Did you? Yeah. I loved it.
I went there for 2 weeks. I did all the things I wanted to do. But I couldn't cope with the poverty.
Oh, no, it's a bit much. It is, listen, it's a bit much. But you know, everyone says, are you going to find yourself, right? So what happens is you get on a plane and 9 hours later you find yourself in India, right? I love that joke. I genuinely love that joke. It doesn't always get much of a laugh, but I genuinely love it. But I did discover who I was there a little bit. I was on my own and I was backpacking around Asia for about 9 months. And when I came back, that's when I started being a comedian, right?
Really?
So I always had a sort of sense of adventure and a bit of a curiosity about stuff. And I guess the point about luck is, if I was a poet, right, I don't think there's really a way to make a sustainable living. I mean, I suppose people can do it, but it's harder. Whereas comedy...
It probably comes to fruition when you're dead anyway, being a poet, doesn't it?
Well, to a certain extent, I just think it's a harder game, right? But doing comedy, there's an outlet for it. This country, it's so shit. There's so many things that we can take the piss out of.
Yeah.
So I get to do comedy for a living, and I just want to do more of that.
Sticking with one last thing on comedy, because we've got a big passion together. And we'll talk about that. But if you could give a couple of bits of advice to young comedians, maybe a young Ian Stone who's just wandering down for his first gig next week, make it 3 weeks because this won't be out next week, but anything you could give them?
I mean, I always tell them the same thing. Keep writing. Keep writing. Just keep trying out stuff. Keep working. What about this? What about this? What about this? You write one joke every day. Let's say you write a joke every day. They're not all going to work, right? And let me tell you, that doesn't change.
Do you go back to your stuff in the past?
Yeah. I'll go through old notebooks. I'll see things. Okay, elephant kebab. What the fuck did that mean? Right, the things I've written down at 2-3 in the morning when I've been wasted. But you keep writing. You'll get a new joke. Oh, that works. And then you'll put that in. Then you'll put another one in. And suddenly. 2 months down the road, you'll have 10 minutes. 6 months down the road, you'll have 20 minutes. Then you'll get an hour. Then you'll write another hour. Keep writing. That's the only advice I ever give to people.
It sounds like sound advice. I want to move
Well, thank you.
Well, it sounds like it. I mean, I'm struggling to write. I mean, I have to write in capitals. I'm struggling to write in the first place, but it sounds like sound advice.
That's what
you've
got to do. That's what you got to do. You got to keep, you know, it doesn't, that's where there isn't any luck. The harder you work, things will pay off.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I've seen that in life. Little loving. We'll have some people switch off now. We'll have some people switch on. My first game, I could have been an extra in Fever Pitch. Because my first game was 1968. My dad took me Eddie sheepskin coat on. He left his mates on the clock end. He got some seats from someone in the West Upper, and I went to see Arsenal Burnley. Started a love affair with Arsenal, still goes on today.
Yeah.
We're in a good place, aren't we?
Yeah, no, no. At the moment, the team are great. I mean, putting aside the fact that we're recording this 2 days after we lost to Bournemouth. But I love this team. I love... I love the club, and I have done since... I started going slightly after you. I was 1969, 70, I'm not sure. I think it might have been Stoke at home, but I don't know. We picked some shit games to start with, though, didn't we?
Well, I suppose Stoke. Really, I mean...
They were good teams. They were better teams then.
Well, but well, our first conversation I had with my son, you know, I said to him, Burnley, and he said, you know, when he was a youngster, but no, Daddy, he said, they're not in the Premiership, which they, at the time, they were in, you know, the Championship.
Division One.
And I said, believe it or not, Burnley and Huddersfield were great sides once upon a time. But it's, yeah, I mean, listen, I suppose as kids, it was easier for mates' parents to get... Not tickets, weren't tickets per se, was it? You just turned up and paid
well,
on
we,
the day.
Well, that, I mean, it was funny, right? Because I did Arsenal Fan TV a few weeks ago, and we were talking, me and Robbie were talking about the fact that our dads...
I used to go with my dad to Arsenal 1 week, Tottenham the following
well,
week.
Well, I never went with my dad to Tottenham, but he used to go to Tottenham and Arsenal on alternate weeks. He went to the entire Tottenham double season in 1960-61.
Did he really? I don't think my old man did that.
Yeah, no, well, my old man didn't want to be at
home. I mean, I remember going, I remember it, yeah. It was standing and you'd rock around, and I remember we'd get the train. I mean, and people say, no, that can't be possible. And I'm saying, I'm telling you. I'd like to know the real reason it stopped. I can only assume Arsenal doing the double might have messed it up.
Oh, what, in terms of why people didn't go to both?
Yeah.
Do you know what? It just never occurred to our generation, I think, to do that. I was an Arsenal fan. I wanted to go to Arsenal. That was it. To go to Spurs, it felt... I mean, I hated them, right? I still do.
I was going to say, what do you mean hated them? You must still do.
Yeah, of course. And by the way, when I say hate, I mean, obviously the football fans will understand exactly
what
we mean.
They know what we mean. If I say that, my wife goes, you shouldn't hate anyone.
But. Yeah. No, of course I hate them. I mean, I don't hate them like I hate, you know, I don't know.
Numpties.
Mass murderers. And, and it's not about that. I'm just saying... Part of the reason that Arsenal Tottenham is such a brilliant derby, such a great atmosphere, is because there's a genuine antipathy between the fans.
Absolutely.
And that's what makes it so great. I mean, there are people in the Tottenham section who I would happily let babysit my kids, right? They're real friends of mine. But obviously for an hour and a half, I don't want to talk to them. Yeah. And for an hour and a half before and after as well. And,
well, it might be a week after if we lose.
Yeah, if they beat us. But obviously it doesn't happen that often. But... Yeah. I love the Arsenal. Of course, I do, and I have done since I was a kid, and that hasn't gone away.
And your favourite player, rumour has it, you really like Liam Brady.
Well, I love Liam Brady. I mean, I was a bit young for Charlie George. Also, Charlie George went to Holloway Boys School, right, up the road from Jewish Free School where I went. And Holloway Boys School used to come up to our school every lunchtime and do Nazi salutes outside the school gates. So Jesus. It's hard to get beyond that, really. Honestly, every lunchtime. I think in the end it was part of the curriculum. Honestly, it was absolutely mad. Those were the days, eh? This is what I mean. This is the 1970s, right? Yeah, they don't do that now.
Bother boots.
But I mean, all of that. But yeah, Liam Brady, that left foot. Just the way he played, he just looked like he had more time on the ball than anyone else.
It was unreal, wasn't he? And the pitches weren't great either, were they?
The pitches weren't great. It was a beautiful footballer. And my youngest, who is a player, who plays regularly, 11-a-side, he's left-footed. And when he was seven, he hit a ball.
You had dreams, did you?
Well, yeah, but it wasn't even about that. I remember when he was about 6, 7 years old, he hit a ball beautifully with his left foot. And it was exactly the same shape as Liam Brady hitting the ball. And I was transported so quickly back to those.
Wasn't
late
easy to
days.
Make those balls. I mean, balls move around now. These balls they have now. I mean, being a goalkeeper is a nightmare now in that way.
Yeah. No, Alexander, my son, he can play, right? And he hit this ball just like Liam Brady. And it really took me back. Yeah, I love Liam Brady. And then Rocky. And then Ian Wright. And then all that lot. That team. And then and then obviously when Arsene Wenger turned up and the Invincibles and Thierry, oh my God, what a beautiful player. And Dennis Bergkamp. And there's been so many, Robert Pires. I mean, we've been blessed. We really have.
Totally and gifted.
And to go and watch these players. And I feel the same way about some of the players in this team now, particularly Bukayo Saka, who I just think is an icon. Is an icon.
And we forget how young he is, don't we?
He's 23, right? He's 23 and he carries himself like someone who's lived 100 lives. I mean, I'm in awe of the kid. I really am. The way that, and what the shit he had to put up with after missing the penalty for England at the Euros, and the way that the club treated him and that wall that they built for him with all the letters from people and people saying, "We love you, Bukayo." And yeah, there's something very special about what's going on at the club at the moment, notwithstanding the result of the weekend. I'm loving it. And to be a small part of it, to do a podcast that people love. It is a real, again, it goes back to that word, that privilege. I can't believe it.
Well, I'm still going to stuck with, work hard. I'm still going to stuck with you make your own luck.
Yeah.
And we are lucky. We are privileged to have this Arsenal side. Mikel?
Oh, well, I mean, I love what he's done. He's transformed the place, hasn't he? Because it was pretty bitter for a few years, wasn't it? The arse end of the Arsene Wenger years. And then Unai, it was a pretty angry place.
Was you an arson out?
Yeah, in the end, yeah. I mean, I didn't want to say it. I absolutely wasn't going to boo him or anything, but there was a point when I was losing interest because it was sort of the same, only slightly worse.
He's got a great sense of humour. I was very privileged and lucky to have a dinner with him.
Yeah.
It was four of us and him.
Yeah.
He's got an amazing sense of humour.
Listen, he's a great guy, and he transformed our club the first time, and he came in and look what he did. But there was a point, he hung about 3 or 4 years too long.
I can't remember, we beat Chelsea in a cup final. I think that would have, the parlour one. That might have been the time
for
him.
No, it was Hull. We beat Hull. It was Hull and then Villa and then there was another one and we won them. But the first one, I think, was Hull when we were 2-0 down and we won 3-2. I thought he should have gone after that. But he certainly should have gone, that 4 years, that 2014 to 2018, it was too long. And we got absolutely spanked by Manchester City in front of about 25,000 people at the Emirates when it was really cold. And apparently they said to him, "Listen, if you don't resign, we're going to have to sack you." And it was a sad way, but he loved it. He loved it. He loved the club and he loved being the manager. But he maybe should have left a few years. But I have nothing but good feelings.
Oh, no, it's all good stuff.
Now.
It's all good stuff. And whoever follows someone like that, a bit like Ferguson at Man United, generally speaking, it's difficult to follow.
Well, Unai's done a really good job at Villa, and obviously they picked a good manager there, but it just obviously wasn't the right time for him. But Mikel's come in, and obviously we want a big trophy at some point very, very soon. Hopefully
there's not
this
many
season,
of them on, up
but
for
it's
grabs,
not,
is
and
there?
We're up against, cheating bastards FC, so what the hell are you going to do? But, I love the way that this team plays. I love the togetherness. I'm having a great time watching them this. The last 2-3 years.
I think what I loved, I love when he came and he talked about getting the club together.
Yeah.
And the way United, particularly the fans, the backroom staff is a different world, particularly the fans. I mean, I'm starting to hear from some of my friends who go to away games at Arsenal, away supporting other teams. They're sitting there saying, "It's not a nice place to go now." And as a football fan, I love that.
Yeah. We try and make it intimidating.
It's noisy. It's hostile in a nice way, but
it's
hostile.
It's great. It's exactly what you want. It's what Highbury could be at its best. And it feels like home now. And it didn't for a long time. Certainly for fans of our age, Highbury was the place, right? It's where we grew up. So suddenly moving to the new stadium, beautiful as it is.
I didn't want to leave.
No, I don't think any of us did. But you know what? I was on my way up to Leeds the other day and the line goes straight past the Emirates.
Finsbury Park, yeah.
And I love that, right? I absolutely love seeing it there. And I love being there now. I mean, I genuinely look forward to the games. And
you're still going as many games as you can?
I go as many home games as I can. And if I can get away tickets, I go there as well. And I went to Munich last year and I'll try and get to another European away this year. And it's exciting times.
So what will be acceptable for us? Because I hear some Arsenal fans, and I really don't get where they're coming from, and go, "Oh, if we don't win anything, he's in trouble." And I'm thinking, you can't seriously be
I don't think it's way. I don't think it's about him being in trouble, but I do think it's about keeping players there who will get their heads turned. I mean, William Saliba will have 2 years left on his contract to the end of this season. If we don't win a big trophy and Real Madrid come in and say we'll pay you $400,000 a week and we'll give Arsenal, you know, $150 million, it'd be hard to say no. And as much as we don't want to lose him, so what would be nice if we could win a big trophy this year. And by that, I mean the league or the Champions League.
Yeah, that's a two,
if we win one of those trophies this year, I think we'll keep those big players for another couple of years. Listen, it's a dog-eat-dog out there, and we have to be competing at the very highest level, and that means winning the trophy. I personally am enjoying it, whatever, but I think it would be great if we could win something big.
Well, I knew when I sat down with you I was going to enjoy this. You've only picked on me once. I've really dodged a few good bullets here.
If you sit under the table, I'll take a piss. I just thought that was weird. What are you doing down there, Blight? Get out from under the fucking table. No, it's been nice to meet you.
Mate, seriously, thank you for your time. Good luck on the tour.
Thank you.
I'm an avid watcher now. My son is as well. Really appreciate your time. Cheers, mate. Thanks
pleasure
for coming. Absolute pleasure seeing you. Thanks, viewers, listeners, probably the funniest episode we've ever had. Really enjoyed it. There's a little nugget out there for you would-be comedians. Keep writing. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Ian Stone, viewers, listeners, thanks very much. See you soon.